Brother John, four visions of God. So they put him in chains for acting too hard. As the crowd shouted off with his head, the priest said, have mercy, let's burn him instead.
Thanks for listening to AM 620 KTOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. Now, to you live from the banks of the Willamette River, it's Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman, online at 620kpoj.com and on the air at AM 620 KPOJ.
Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. Our producer is Paul Pimentel. I'm your host, Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. Looks like we got some people fired up out there. So before we get to the Reverend Barry Lynn, we're going to take a call or two. Anna in Portland, welcome to Mad as Hell in America. What's got you mad as hell?
Hi there.
Hi.
I've been mad as hell for about 3 decades.
Good for you.
I'm mad as hell because we, the people, don't seem to have critical thinking. And if we don't have critical thinking, how are we, the people, going to rise up against the corporations? That's what I'd like to know.
I agree with you. What piece of critical thinking do you think is the most important? I mean, what is really missing?
Critical thinking means you've got logic. You've got the ability to figure out what kind of news to listen to. And it should be taught in grade schools. And we don't teach our kids critical thinking in grade school.
No, you're right about that. And it makes sense. It makes sense to start cutting education so we also at the same time undercut people's critical thinking skills. Anna, thank you so much for calling AM 620 KPOJ and Mad as Hell in America. The number 866-452-0620 or 503-248-0620. 620 from your AT&T wireless phone. Let's go to Valerie in Hyson, Washington. Thanks for calling Mad as Hell in America.
Hi, I first want to thank you for this show. I'm mad as hell at the apathy in this country.
Me too.
That the people in this country aren't standing up and saying, I'm mad as hell. And with that apathy, I believe, as your previous caller, critical thinking, brains are atrophying. People aren't thinking, common sense. We were the heroes of the world after World War II, not because our forces went into Europe and beat Hitler, but because after the war we went in and we rebuilt those countries. Why aren't we spending 10% of what we're spending on our military forces in the Middle East on building hospitals and then schools? And through that kind of effort, we bring about more peace and justice in this world.
Valerie, thanks so much for the call. That is in line with one of my basic bumper sticker philosophies, which is export justice and import peace. If you export justice to people, if you export kind, loving acts, if you build hospitals, schools, provide people with foods, jobs, and a good economy, they will love you for it. And it's really not that complicated an equation. Well, we're going to move on because we have a very, very special guest with us tonight. It is the Reverend Barry Lynn. He is Executive Director for Americans United for Separation of Church and State. It's a position he's held since October of 1992. He's a longtime activist in the civil liberties field, and he is arguably one of our nation's foremost authorities on separation of church and state. He is both a reverend and a lawyer. The website is www.au.org. Barry, welcome to the show.
Adam, it's nice to be here. I notice a lot of your callers are angry, and I've spent some time with some people who were very angry myself for the last 2 days.
Why don't you tell people a little bit about where you've been, Barry?
Well, I'll tell you, almost every year I go to whatever big right-wing events are held in the fall, religious right-dominated events, and yesterday and today, the Values Voters Summit met here in Washington, D.C. This is sponsored by the very extreme group called the Family Research Council, along with the Heritage Foundation and a couple of other people who never saw a government program they liked and don't apparently have any answers to any of the problems you and your callers are talking about. But this was particularly wacky this year because we had not only the religious right, but also the Tea Party activists merging together in what I think is best called an unholy form of matrimony. And the the what comes out of the breeding of these two groups is enough to scare anybody. And I thought I couldn't really be scared anymore. But they're all using each other, Adam. They're both using each other because their goal is they have to radically change America, not in the way that you or I or your last two callers would like, but to return us to some fantasy world where the market did everything right, where religions people knew everything and could tell the rest of us exactly what to do by their moral standards.
There seems to have grown up in recent years this kind of, as you're describing, this unholy alliance between kind of religious fundamentalists and what I call corporate fundamentalists. Where do those interests conjoin?
Yeah, it's interesting because it's sad in some ways, because when you hear people talk about what is wrong with government, they never seem at conferences like the Values Voter Summit to understand that there's another alliance that's pretty unholy, and that is between at least many political leaders, sadly, in both parties these days, and big corporate interests that, frankly, subsume the interests of the average person. So when the folks at the Values Voter Summit rail against what they always call Obamacare, they don't seem to understand that even this modest health change, health care reform change that we're going to see is hardly socialism. It's hardly anything like it. It uses the market, but it also recognizes that the market cannot preserve everything, and neither can the American family just working harder. There are some things that are just overwhelming to American families, but of course these groups, the far-right groups at the Values Voter Summit, believe the government doesn't like families, and if they would just leave families alone, which means don't tax them really at all if they could get away with it, everything will be rosy. It's another world, Adam. It's a world that most people don't get a chance to see, and sometimes I suggest that others like myself go to these big gatherings or these regional gatherings of religious right and Tea Party activists and really listen to what they're saying, because it's frightening.
So what you're saying is that we can't all go back to sleep now, and that the religious right is still out there and they're forming. What's on their agenda next? I mean, where do you see this kind of unholy alliance headed?
Well, the first thing, in the next 45 days, they want to make sure that the entire leadership of the Washington, D.C. is gone. So they're constantly talking about Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi. They realize, although some of them speak in a way that you'd think they don't realize this, that the president's still going to be the president at least for another 2 years. But they want to make sure, as Senator Jim DeMint, one of the most conservative members of the United States Senate, he basically said the other day, you know, we just want gridlock for the next 2 years. Don't do anything. I mean, you got to give him some credit, I guess, for being honest about what his goal is. But this is truly a movement of no, no, and no. They're going to use some elected officials who feel that way, the religious right that feels that way, unless, of course, they're trying to regulate your personal life, then they're happy to do that. And the Tea Party that really stands for, frankly, nothing except, we don't like it, and it is anything.
We're talking to Barry Lynn, Executive Director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, probably and arguably our nation's foremost authority on separation of church and state. Barry, I must say that I'm very glad that there are people like you out there attending these kinds of conventions, because if you weren't there, I don't know who would be. And speaking of critical thinking, boy, we really need it when it comes to the religious right, because they are making powerful emotional arguments that make no logical sense. Barry, will you stay with us? We had talked about...
Absolutely.
Maybe, that'd be great. When we come back with Barry Lynn, we're going to ask the question, why can't progressives talk about God? Why is God and religion and spirituality the domain of conservatives? We're going to take up that topic with the Reverend Barry Lynn when we come back, and I'm really looking forward to the discussion. Barry, thank you so much for being here. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. Thanks for listening.
It's Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman on AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
If Jesus saves, well, it better save himself from the gory glory.
getting mad as hell with Adam Klugman on AM 620 KPOJ and 620 KP.
God say no, Abe say what? God say you can do what you want, Abe, but next time you see me.
Hello, at America with Adam Klugman. Our producer is Paul Pimentel. I am your host, Adam Klugman, and we are talking to the Reverend Barry Lynn. If you want to talk to Barry Lynn, please feel free to call us here at AM 620 KPOJ. The number is 1-866-452-0620 or 503-248-0620 or pound 620 from your AT&T wireless phone. Coming up right after Barry Lynn, your mad as hell calls. But if you'd like to speak with the Reverend Barry Lynn, please give us a call here now. Barry, welcome back to the show.
It's nice to be back and nice to be gone from the Values Voter Summit.
Yes, I bet that you need some Advil after something like that.
You need a cold shower and a hot shower and a couple of medium rain showers.
Maybe someday I'll join you there. I'd like to see that for myself. It's probably just mind-blowing.
Well, no, it is, but I will say this. There are people, of course, I'm, shall I say, well-known in those circles as the chief opponent, if not a near demonic power myself. So people come up and say, well, can I take my picture with you? And I try to be, you know me, Adam, I try to be a nice person. I say yes. But if I charge, I don't know, $4.99 a picture or something, I'd probably be a wealthier man.
You could pay for your airfare. Look, here I am with the devil. We're talking with Barry Lynn, the executive director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Barry, you are a reverend and a lawyer. How do you reconcile those two things?
Well, it's pretty easy, actually, because I think one of the things that the law does and what the Constitution does is to protect the right of people to have one or be a member of one of the nearly 2,000 different religions we have in this country, or, frankly, to be one of the 20 million or so non-believers, free thinkers, atheists. And I realize, because, among other things, I've read the comments about on your blog, which I suggest that people do and they go visit you on the Internet. And there was a gentleman who said, you know, religion's inherently not progressive. You can't have a progressive religion. I, with all deference, I have to disagree with that. I think that progressives who are religious, however, are embarrassed. They're embarrassed because if you go to a party or you go to some other social event and somebody says, well, you know, he goes to church, or in my case, he's a minister, you're almost shunned, because most of the people at the party believe that you must be a wacky guy, a person who is on the far right fringes, trying to merge church and state, trying to tell people what to do in their private lives from the moment of conception until the moment of death. This is the kind of image that's been created because of how bad, but how powerful the message has been from the so-called religious right. So a part of it's embarrassment. People who are progressive and religious say, well, we don't want to be lumped in with those bad guys. But I do think we've got a very strong message. The message is we want to make sure that everybody who has any views on religion, or for that matter, any other topic, good, bad, or ugly, have a right to say so, have a right to promote that idea, and have a right not to be considered a second-class citizen in this country. Those non-believers I mentioned are the one group that still has the highest percentage of people in public opinion polls who say they wouldn't want their son or daughter to marry one of those non-believers. In other words, you can be of any race, but if you're a non-believer, yeah, that's bad. So we have a lot to learn, and I think we've gone a long way, and we've learned even from the horrendous events of a week ago with that crazed pastor, and that's really what he is. I mean, we should use language that is appropriate. That's why I called him crazed. It's 30, 40 members of his church talking about maybe he's going to burn the Quran, and of course the Secretary of Defense has to call him up, pleading with him not to do so. This is one of the things, though, that has created in Florida, in that little town where, not so little town, actually, Gainesville's a reasonable-sized place, a lot of interfaith efforts and a lot of non-believer efforts to kind of come in support of the right of Muslims to practice their religion and not to be viewed as the second-class citizens that the Quran-burning pastor would turn them into.
We're talking with Barry Lynn, Executive Director for Separation of for Americans United for Separation of Church and State. The website is www.au.org, an invaluable organization that really defends religious freedom on every front. Barry, as I said, is its executive director. And we're here talking about why can't progressives talk about God? And one of the things that Barry just said is that, quite frankly, that progressives feel ashamed. If you're a progressive and you go to a progressive party and you say you're a believer, you just don't know what kind of reaction you can get. Barry, I don't know if you're comfortable talking about it, but you're a believer, you're a reverend. That's not just in name only. Do you think of yourself as a believer?
Oh, absolutely. Frequently people who are not believers but who come and hear me speak somewhere will say, "Wow, you know, we believe everything you said about whatever the constitutional or legal issue is." And then they'll pull me aside and go, "Well, but I mean that God stuff, I mean, you don't really believe that." And I said, "Well, you know, I always say if you want to talk about it that at some time, be happy to do that. I've had excellent dialogues on my own radio program and other things where I talk to people about these issues. I think they're terribly important. But once you decide what your position is on matters of spirituality and religion, you need to mix that in an appropriate way with the rest of your life and move accordingly. The other thing that, frankly, progressives don't do, I think most sensible people, at least, believe that the religious right is wrong when it tries to find proof texts in the Bible for everything that it wants. You know, there were proof texting today about what's going to happen in the Middle East and Bible prophecy, and they proof text to prove that gay people should not be able to be married, and you know, the endless streams. We don't want to become, on the progressive end, the same kind of people. We don't want to say to members of Congress, you know, vote for an immigration reform bill because Jesus would have wanted that. That's not the point. We come through many channels to positions on these issues, contentious questions, same-sex marriage, immigration, the budget, and all of that. But what we need as progressives to do when we talk to elected officials is not say Jesus wants you to do this, but to use the commonly shared values that we as Americans have, many of them adequately, brilliantly expressed in the Constitution, to make our arguments. And that's one other difference between progressive Christians in politics who come to their conclusions because of what they believe, but don't try to impose that or go to members of Congress and say, vote for this because Jesus or somebody else, you could name almost any god or gods, and say he or she believes it. They've got to go away from that.
Barry, we only have a minute left, but a question that burns in me that I never get a satisfactory answer to. What is it about the kind of literalism that you were talking about that makes people feel that they have to impose their beliefs on others? I just don't understand that impulse.
Well, part of the impulse for Christian fundamentalists, that is, people who literally read every word of the Bible, is they say, well, look at the passage in the Bible. It says, it's kind of a more delicate way to say my way or the highway. You cannot know the Father but through me, says Jesus. And as a consequence, that for literalists proves that there's only one religion. It's Christianity. If it's good enough for God, you think it would be good enough to impose on everybody. That's the impulse, I think, that drives them to do the things that, well, drive you mad as hell.
Yeah, it does. I think orthodoxy is the problem. Orthodoxy of any sort. Absolutism always seems to get us in trouble because we feel the need to defend it. And as we defend it, we become increasingly more insecure. Barry Lynn, thank you so much for coming. Executive Director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. The website is www.au.org. Barry, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Pleasure to do it.
I hope you'll come back.
I will.
You are listening to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman on AM 620, KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. When we come back, your Mad as Hell call, so stay with us.
You're listening to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman on AM 620, KPOJ, and 620kpoj.com.
Concept. by which we measure our pain.
Now, back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman on AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
What are you mad as hell about? What are you mad as hell about?
I'm mad about the corporate control of America taking away our rights.
I'm mad as hell about the lack of equity in higher education.
Mad as hell about the increasing inequality in this country.
I'm mad as hell about the right wing and the Tea Partiers' hypocrisy.
I'm mad as hell about the apathy of people in this country, the fact that you can go to any sports arena and get 50,000 people, and the things that really matter, you're lucky if you can get 50.
I'm mad as hell because I feel like our resources are underutilized.
I'm mad as hell because people are out spewing information that's false.
I'm mad as hell because I believe that we need a new investigation of 9/11.
I'm mad as hell that we're spending billions of dollars on these wars that make no sense.
I'm mad as hell that we've gone and killed so many Iraqis and destroyed their culture and lost so many of our own men and women in the process, that we're doing the same thing in Afghanistan.
I'm mad as hell about the fact that corporations think they can vote, or if not vote by the vote.
I'm mad as hell because the Congress is a dead in the water.
I think the Democrats suck.
And then there's Republicans, who the greedy obstructionist party.
I think we need a real second party, or as Doug LaFollette said, a first party, a party that puts the people first.
Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. Our producer is Paul Pimentel. I'm your host, Adam Klugman, and you are listening to a little montage that I put together after I attended Fighting Bob Fest in Baraboo, Wisconsin. And we're going to get into that a little more in the next show. It actually wasn't Doug LaFollette, it's Bob LaFollette. I don't know if there is a Doug LaFollette, but there is a Bob LaFollette, and Fighting Bob Fest is named after him. He was a congressman from Wisconsin. He was a senator from Wisconsin. He was the governor of Wisconsin. And he is one of their progressive heroes. And we're going to get more into that in the next show. But right now, we're going to get into your calls. But before we do that, I want to plug the website. MadAsHellInAmerica.com is the website. And there's a discussion board there. And I really want you to encourage you to go there, to have it be a place where we can really begin to discuss the progressive issues of the day honestly and openly. We're not going to carry water for any party or for anyone, just for ourselves for a change. Doesn't that sound nice? MadAsHellInAmerica.com is the website. There's a discussion board. There's also something there called the Mad as Hell Minute. And I want to see people try this. Just try it, because it's really important to kind of park yourself in front of your computer and fire up the camera and try in 60 seconds or 30 seconds or however long it takes you to express why you're mad as hell. It feels really good to kind of broadcast this to the world. And as the audience for this show grows and as membership to the website grows, you will be able to broadcast your thoughts, your feelings, your indignation, your hope, your grief, your anger to the world. And underneath it, people will be able to respond. And this is something a function of the website that I really want people to start using. Also, we're going to start something called the Mobile Mad as Hell Minute. And if you text Mad as Hell to 41513, that's Mad as Hell to 41513, you will get in the queue. And what I may do on the next show is just call you up. I'll have your phone number. I'll call you up and say, do you want to appear on the show? Is there something that you're mad as hell about? And I'll take one of the segments and we'll just have a discussion. I really want this show to be about populist sentiment. That's texting 41513. That's mad as hell to 41513. Coming up in the next segment, we are going to have our exclusive two-part interview with Dennis Kucinich. But right now, we are going to the calls. Tom in Sherwood, thanks so much for calling Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. What's on your mind? Stephen in Sherwood, thank you for calling Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. What's on your mind?
Is this me?
It's you, Stephen. Go.
Yeah,
Well, I'm heading in a slightly different direction here, Adam. I'm mad as hell at the Pendleton Roundup and at Oregon Public Broadcasting, which is kind of more local. What I'm angry about is that they're celebrating 100 years of the Pendleton Roundup, and OPB put on a show on their program Think Out Loud, where they're celebrating the Pendleton Roundup, and I called to be on this show and asked them, asked the producer, why are you celebrating 100 years of animal abuse in the United States? And, of course, they wouldn't put me on the air. And I think it's a really bad statement that over the past 100 years, we've had all kinds of, a litany of rights that have come along for all kinds of human rights, but look what we're celebrating. In 100 years, we're still jumping off of horses and attacking defenseless animals. 100 years, and that's what we're celebrating. So that's what I'm mad as hell about today.
You know, Stephen, thank you so much for the call. The phone numbers here are 818-662-452-0620 or 503-248-0620 or #620 from your AT&T wireless phone. I have to agree with Stephen that I really hate it when I see these kind of small animals just being attacked and tied up, and somehow that's being held up as a symbol of pride. And yet, there is this element of this Wild West heritage in it. And I ultimately think I land on the side of Stephen. Let's stop just kind of senselessly abusing animals. Let's go to Tom in Sherwood. Tom, welcome. Thanks for calling Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. What are you mad as hell about?
Yeah, hello. Well, I'm mad as hell about the corporation situation. And everybody talks about, they know there's something wrong, but nobody puts their finger on the problem. And the problem is this. The executives took over the boards, and the board of directors is the only people who were supposed to control them to protect the interests of the stockholders, and the corporate and the executives took over the boards and removed all control. And now we see all these problems everybody gripes about, the executive pay and the executive actions, is simply because there's no controls on them. Put the boards back to being in the interest of the stockholders. Let the stockholders elect who's on the boards and watch the problems go away.
You bet. The problem is that we have corporate lawyers writing the laws for the corporations. I mean, I think that was never more clear than the recent health care bill that Senator Baucus worked on. I mean, he just went behind closed doors and he grabbed a bunch of health insurance industry lawyers and they crafted the bill that ultimately got passed. Well, do we have time for one more call, Paul? No, we don't have time for one more call. Well, thanks for calling. The numbers here are 1-866-452-0620, 503-248-0620, or #620 from your AT&T wireless phone. You are listening to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. When we come back, we are going to have our exclusive two-part interview with Congressman Kucinich about his vote on health care.
I'm not somebody who anybody can pressure within the confines of Washington, D.C. Doesn't happen. Never has happened in my career here that anybody put pressure on me that I had to do something. I don't even think in those terms.
It's Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman on AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. Our producer is Paul Pimentel. I am your host, Adam Klugman, and you are listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. I listen to it all the time. Phone numbers are 1-866-452-0620, 503-248-0620, or #620 from your AT&T wireless phone. And we're going to try to get some calls in the last part of the show, but right now we have something really special. We have a two-part interview, an exclusive interview with Representative Dennis Kucinich from the 10th District of Ohio. I caught up with him earlier this week, and I wanted to discuss his vote for the president's health care bill, even though he had once stated that he wouldn't vote for anything that didn't have a public option based on his support for single payer. And yet he found himself in a very difficult position where he was receiving lots of attention and lots of pressure from the president to vote for a bill that he knew was severely compromised. Not only did the bill not have a public option, it had, I mean, it wasn't single payer. It had no public option in it. In fact, it was kind of a holding Americans hostage by mandating that they buy a private product. So I understand Kucinich's difficulty here. And afterwards, we're going to have Dr. Margaret Flowers, who was one of the Baucus 8, who was arrested when she challenged Senator Baucus, who refused to have any single-payer witnesses at the initial hearings when they were discussing how to reform the healthcare system. She challenged him, and he had her arrested. This is a Democratic senator who had Dr. Margaret Flowers, and we're going to have her here. She's still out there working for single payer, and we're going to have her here to respond to Dennis Kucinich's interview. So coming up, I just want to set up the clip a little bit. So how did Kucinich find himself in this position? You know, you were there, you saw what a long, convoluted process it was. But essentially, two bills came out. One bill was came out of the Senate, and one bill came out of the House. The Senate bill had no public option. The House bill was more liberal, and it had a public option. The process finally got so crazy that Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, declared that he was going to pass the bill by a reconciliation vote, which means he doesn't need 60 to be filibuster-proof. He only needs 51 votes. But he has a problem. He knows that he can't get the liberal bill passed out of the House that has the public option. Why? Because we don't have a liberal Senate, right? So he knows that the only hope that he has of getting it passed is to go with the Senate bill. So he can't get the House bill passed. So he goes to the Senate bill and they send it to the House. But when the bill arrives in the House, you have liberal Democrats walking away from it because it has nothing even resembling a public option. And you have conservatives and conservative Democrats walking away from it because it has a weird abortion language, soft abortion language on it. And so the president, hoping to gain support from progressives in the House, reaches out to Dennis Kucinich. He flies him on Air Force One. He visits his district and he applies the pressure. And what follows is a pre-recorded interview with Representative Dennis Kucinich about his ultimate decision to support the president's bill. Congressman Kucinich, this is Adam Klugman.
How are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Good.
Thank you so much for agreeing to appear on the show. This is the inaugural program, and it's a real honor to have you here, I must say.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to be on your inaugural show.
Congressman Kucinich is our guest from the 10th District of Ohio, and we're discussing the state of progressive activism here in America. Is it time to start losing on principle, or should we still be engaging in compromise? No other politician in recent memory has been confronted more directly with this dilemma than yourself. When President Obama asked you to put aside your long-standing commitment to single payer and vote for what most of us feel on the left was a severely compromised health care bill. In the end, you chose to support the president and his bill. It must have been a very difficult decision for you. Would you mind taking us through the process?
Sure. From the time I got into Congress in 1997, I have been promoting the idea of a single-payer bill. John Conyers and I got together and drafted legislation so that single-payer, not-for-profit health care would move to the forefront of debate on health care in the United States. We were able to get 91 members of Congress to join us in our efforts to advance a single-payer program. So by the time President Obama came in and brought forward a health care initiative, it not only was not about single-payer, it turned out not even to be about a public option. And it was to, in a way, it just helped keep entrenched this for-profit health care system we have, even though it offered people benefits. When all was said and done, I felt that it was very important to be able to advance some kind of health care reform, even though I object to the fact the only reform that the Obama administration could find was within the context of a for-profit system. Still, within the context of that system, we were able to cover children with pre-existing conditions, then eventually everyone would be able to get access to insurance that young people up to age 26 would be able to be on their parents' policy, that 33 million Americans would have access to insurance they wouldn't have before, that certain benefits for seniors with respect to prescriptions would be phased in. So in this case, it was a step in the direction of reform. If we had stopped it, I think that we would have stayed at square one, status quo, where the insurance companies would have proven to be unassailable.
Congressman, I think a lot of people feel that maybe if we had gotten nothing, maybe if we had just voted everything down, that we would be in a better position to actually have a single-payer conversation, and that by passing what was, we all agree, is a pretty compromised health care bill, puts us in a worse position as far as single-payer
well,
is concerned.
You know, there's a phrase that says, out of nothing comes nothing, and we would have received nothing. I mean, I'm not someone who was celebrating the passage of this bill. I knew better than most people the deficiencies of it. But we still have the opportunity to continue to work for single payer. And I think that the effort's going to turn sharply to the states. And I think that's where the entire debate is going to go towards. In no way do I intend to stop my efforts here in Washington on single payer. I think sooner or later, this system, which has been cobbled together, even though it's changed somewhat, it's not sustainable.
We're here talking with Congressman Kucinich from the 10th District of Ohio. Congressman, you and John Conyers sponsored a bill, 676. Where does 676 stand, which was pretty close to a single payer bill?
Well, we'll be reintroducing it in the next Congress. The administration never wanted to consider any aspect of single payer. It wasn't on their agenda. The president mentioned during his campaign that he was not someone who supported single payer. I have a fundamental disagreement with President Obama on that, and I think that the genuine reform that's needed is to get out of the for-profit system, to get rid of the yoke that the insurance companies have placed on the necks of the American consumers. And only when we do that will we be in a position of being able to not only improve the health of everyone in this country, but also improve the American economy, which is greatly affected by the high cost of health care, one aspect of which is tremendous profits that insurance and pharmaceutical companies take as a result of the present system.
You got a lot of pressure to vote for the president's bill. I know it's on my mind, and I know it's on the mind of our listeners. What happened on Air Force One? What did the president say to you? What was that conversation like?
Well, you know, the president didn't convince me to vote for his bill. It wasn't that something he said to me. I had to look at a much bigger picture than the politics of the moment. I had to look at what would happen if the bill went down and the chances of having any discussion about reform down the road. I mean, what I advocated is something much bigger than what was passed. And if something that was minimal in its aspirations couldn't get through, what hope would we have of doing something grander later on? It wasn't what the president told me, it's how I read the moment. It was important to have a chance to talk with him, but he didn't convince me of anything. But when I left the discussion, I knew that I had to make a decision that was based not just on what the president wanted, but based on something even more important, and that is the long-term interest of my own constituents and of the American people. And if I did not want to be the person that sent this bill down and with it any hope for further reform in health care, I had to put this in a balance and decide what was best without regard to the implications of politics and actually without regard to the appeal by my own president. I had to think about this in a much broader way.